The Money Show with Stephen Curtis is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Absa is a proud lead sponsor of B20 South Africa 2025.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
The Investment School is brought to you by CFI, a leading global trading platform now available in South Africa. CFI Financial is an authorized financial services provider. Well, as you know, we've often looked at markets, we've looked at stocks, we've looked at bonds, and we've looked particularly over the last few months at the volatility in all of that market. Tonight on Investment School, we're looking at what you would call alternative investments. So things that are not sort of normal, but may act as a really good store of value and increase in value over time. So, for example, cryptocurrencies is perhaps the ultimate one at the moment, but we would include art, wine, I suppose, maybe cigars, who knows, cars, things like that. That's what we're looking at this evening in the studio with me, Dr. Musa Malwandla, is the co-chief investment officer at Differential Capital. Musa, good evening. Thanks so much for coming in.
Good evening, and good evening to the listeners.
I suppose the first question would be, why would we want an alternative investment? What's wrong with everything else? And I mean, the answer to that is plenty.
Yeah, so I think the best way to think about it is in terms of how you normally put together a portfolio, right? So you think about what is called the traditional three factors. So one is investment return. So in other words, what is the expected return on the asset? So if you buy today, what do you expect on the other end when you eventually sell it? The other part is risk. In other words, how risky is it? So if things go wrong, how much do you stand to lose? And then the last piece is how well it fits in with everything else you have in the portfolio. Now, for the alternative investments, the last piece is actually generally the most important, is that it diversifies what you're already holding. So something like crypto, the presumption is usually that when things are going bad, it's doing at least a bit better. So it's usually like, a substitute for gold. In fact, some people have said it's digital gold if gold had mood swings.
Yeah. I'm not convinced of that, by the way. But yes, I've heard the argument.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So that's the one part. And you can say the same about, things like fine art, collectible cars and so on. Now, the problem is the middle part as well, because the risk component, in that while you might expect that, so the saying is often that, companies can go bankrupt, but a Picasso can't go bankrupt, right? So there's a protection in holding something like fine art. Now, on the other end is that you've seen, so if you track, there are various indices that track things like fine art, collectible cars, in the Great Financial Recession, so the GFC of 2008, that index, so some of these indices collapsed as much as your traditional S&P and so on. So I think that argument is not as strong, but at least from a diversification perspective, that argument is quite strong. So I think those are maybe the more general things you might look at. Now, there are a few specific things that you then need to look at when you think about these alternative assets. So the first one is liquidity, is that if you buy stocks, it's very easy for you to liquidate, to just simply sell it when you need to buy something else. With fine art, not so much. With cars, maybe with crypto. In fact, with crypto, you might argue that's covered. The other part is transaction costs, right? So if you think about the transaction cost for buying a share, it's usually a fraction of a percent. It's not that much. Whereas if you're buying fine art, a car, you're buying it on auction, you have to pay the auction value, the auction, commissions and so on. There's also then the carry cost. In other words, how much does it cost you to hold on to the asset?
Well, I was going to ask, because, I mean, if you've got a very fancy old car, say you've got a Ferrari California or something, I think only 50 were made, you have to store that somewhere. It has to be safe. Someone has to drive it very carefully, all of those things.
Precisely. So what happens there is, even with art, right, you have to, maintain it. I mean, there are various, things that you have to do to it. You have to hold insurance against it. So there are several issues with that carry. So that's the other component. Now, on the offsetting piece, which is usually not how you look at normal financial assets, is what you call the, the social aspect of it, or the what economists call possessional goods. So what that is there are certain things that we hold, not just for what they give us financially, or even the utility of the thing, but rather what it proves to the other people around you. So having people for dinner and, you know, talking about your fancy new painting and so on. So I think that part is probably as strong with fine arts and so on. And interesting enough, just one more point is with something like crypto, in fact, even with something like, you know, shares in Tesla, and is there is an affiliation that you get from holding that. There's a social sort of value that you derive from it. So there are those kinds of aspects. And I think they fit squarely even within something like crypto.
I mean, that would make sense. You're sort of giving a nod to you go in this direction, as it were. Okay. Are there moments when you should look more to alternative investments than other moments? In other words, when we're in a moment of great volatility like we are now, do alternative investments look a little bit more attractive than they would otherwise? Especially when we're in the middle of a great kind of capital switch, you know, money's been going into the US, now some of it's leaving the US. You're looking for a safe haven. Would Picasso be a good place?
Yeah, so yes and no. So here's the problem with that is, the answer for something like crypto would likely be yes, in the sense that it is as we said, it's a type of gold. It's a safe haven asset. It doesn't collapse as much when things are going bad. Now the problem is that with a lot of the other assets, the argument has often been that they are less volatile, but it's not the volatility. It's not the difference with something like equities is that we watch equity prices on a daily basis. So we don't see the volatility, right? We don't see the mark to market. Whereas with something like a Picasso, a car that's sitting in your garage, you don't see the valuation, but it's actually there. It's collapsing. It's bobbing up and down. And what's even more important with something like that, with something that experiences that level of volatility, is that the point at which you buy becomes a lot more important, right? Is that you can buy at the wrong point in the cycle, you know, when something is up. And, you know, so for instance, there would have been a point where you bought Bitcoin and lost half of it, right? Well, now you would be up, but that's a separate argument. So I think the direct answer is that there is a point in time to buy, but it isn't as compelling for a lot of the other assets. So the non-crypto assets as it is for something like crypto, that's a safe haven.
One of the arguments against this would be that if I buy a share in Capitec or ShopRite, or even if I bought a Platinum share a year ago, it would probably have paid me out a dividend at some point. And crypto, Picasso, who's a completely different character, that does exist, all of that won't, I mean, car might love it, but it won't pay me a dividend. And isn't that an argument against it? And it's the same for bonds, of course, because you also get a payment there.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, you're absolutely right in a sense in that whenever you buy an asset, you need to think carefully about what sits on the other side. In other words, what use do you want to put the asset to? So you think about your cash flow demands over the next few years.
Yeah.
And that's even more important in the case of something buying a collectible car, because you can't liquidate it, right? It's much harder to liquidate at the right time. So that's definitely it. So if you are going to buy or invest in an asset like that, it's much more important to think about your cash flow requirements over the next few years. And also how much of a cash buffer do you have? How much liquidity do you have in other assets that you would be able to liquidate if you need the capital?
The other thing is that when you are getting constant valuations of a company's shares, so again, Capitec, you can see them going up and up and up and sometimes down if something happens, whatever it is, you kind of know where you are. And you made the point that you don't actually know the valuation, right? So for example, there was a South African artist, and I forget her name now, but Marlene Dumas, that's right. Her artwork sold for 245 million rand at an auction, makes her, I think, the world's sort of, it's a strange kind of figure, but the most expensive female living artist. Okay, it's a very strange title. Someone will make a band name of it. But you wouldn't have predicted that 20 years ago, and you wouldn't know in 20 years if her artwork will still be worth that. What I'm trying to say is tastes change, and today's cryptocurrency could be tomorrow's tulip, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. 100% right. So you actually saw a lot of that with non-fungible tokens, right? That came into vogue in 20. I mean, it's still there in the market, right? You can still buy these things. But the problem, that's essentially the problem, right? Is there are certain types of assets that, so with a company, you know what, it'll always have value. The value is the profits that
and you can see company, if it works.
You can see if it works.
Yeah.
So, now, with something like, you know, a collectible, that argument is much harder to make. Now, on the other hand, is with something like crypto, right? So cryptocurrency, is that the presumption from a fundamental perspective is that as more people buy into the enter the network and so on, it gains more value, right?
Yeah.
And you know, with in periods of high inflation and so on, that accelerates. So there is, in some sense, a fundamental anchor. In other words, something that's deriving value for cryptocurrency. It's much harder to say that for other assets, though. Is that, and I think that's where the possessional good aspect becomes more important. In that, you usually buy these things because you see in you yourself see value in it.
Yeah. So I mean, for example, you could say, okay, I've got an old petrol-driven car, in 50 years' time, people are going to look at that and think, well, you can't drive it anymore, you can't get petrol, everything's electric. But it could suddenly become so much more valuable because it's the last sort of fossil of its kind, and you don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah, well, that's true, and it could swing the complete other way in the sense that maybe in 50 years' time, you know, with the effects of climate change, we'll now really hate these kinds of things.
But
again,
it'll be the modern day Tesla,
precisely. And what happens is that if you think about that risk component that we spoke about earlier, where we usually argue that Picasso can't go bankrupt, it could happen, right? It could happen that these things completely lose value.
We're speaking to Dr. Musamal Wandlap, the Chief Investment Officer at Differential Capital, looking at alternative investments tonight on Investment School. You with The Money Show.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
Dr. Musamal Wandlap in our studio, the Co-Chief Investment Officer at Differential Capital. We're looking at alternative investments this evening because of, you know, when you're bored with stocks and bonds and, you know, the person who you might be bored with as a result of all of this. Okay, so Musa, when you're looking at these things, they're all a little specialist. Cryptocurrencies, I'm just going to put to one side for a moment. But if you're looking at art, cars, wine, it's not the kind of thing you just go and say, I'm going to buy that. You would actually need to do a lot of research, but actually you would probably need to speak and pay an expert.
Yeah, that's also true. So that's part of those transaction costs. Now, there are, in today's world, platforms where you can, in fact, so the other problem with buying things like collectibles is that you would be buying, so the ticket sizes are massive, right? You can't just buy a share for 1,000 rands and so on. You would be buying something for 1 million now. That limits your ability to diversify. Now, coming back to the original point is that there are platforms that help you do this, right? So you can not just, so firstly, the appraisal of the art would happen on the platform, and also you would be able to buy fractions of the art. So you could buy maybe a fraction of 10 paintings and so on. So that at least covers some of the problems with appraisals. But you're still 100% correct in that there's a lot of opacity in how you. So even the purchase price that you would pay at the beginning, and even when you eventually dispose of the asset, you never really know, you know, whether you're getting fair price and what is a fair price. So I think those kinds of things sort of prohibitive for most investors.
Does it matter how long you want the investment for? So if you're thinking of art, if the longer you hold it, if it's a big name, imagine you could probably buy a share in a Da Vinci painting. If you can buy a share in a Boxers, you can. You should be able to buy a share in a Da Vinci painting. That it might be the kind of thing that you stick with it. All of the others, it's got to fit in with the rest of your portfolio. But it's the kind of diversity share, if you like, not for you, not for your old age, but actually for your grandchildren. It's that kind of legacy wealth kind of thing.
I suppose so. So again, the problem is the point you made earlier around who knows what trends will look like in 50 years. However, I will say this, that when you look at the indices that track fine arts, collectible cars and so on, it's quite clear that they do actually perform quite well in the long term. Mm. They don't give you as much upside as equities.
Mm.
So equities actually beat. I mean, there's something called the equity premium puzzle in markets where, for some reason or another, in fact, no one has ever figured it out, equities just outperform more than what is justified by the underlying if you do a sum of the parts or bottom-up theoretical analysis. So they don't really outperform that, you know, that asset class, but they still perform well enough. And I think for that reason, from a diversification perspective, they do make sense. However, going back to another earlier point around liquidity, if you're buying it in your pension, you know, as part of your retirement plan, and you're retiring in 5 years and you'll need some of the cash flow, it's probably not a very good idea, right? And in fact, even at best, if you're a normal investor, the guidance usually for these alternative types of assets is never more than, you know, 5% of your portfolio. So yes, put away some money towards these things, but you want to be cautious around it.
I mean, I suppose it also takes you to, do you get involved in different parts of the same kind of product? So you wouldn't buy a whole Picasso, you'd buy, I don't know, a fraction of one and a fraction of a Marlene Dumas. And you'll do the same with crypto. You'd buy a little bit of Bitcoin and a little bit of something else. You know, you would sort of try and spread the load a little bit, and that could have pluses and minuses. You don't really know what's going to happen.
You know, 100%. So what happens is with each, even within the crypto space, there are different types of cryptocurrencies for different use cases. So, you know, for things like non-fungible tokens, that's a marketplace on its own. Bitcoin has a certain purpose in the market, and I think it's very important. So with any active investment, it's important to think about, firstly, why are you buying that asset, right? What kind of return potential do you expect from it, in the same way as you would think about a company? Now, it's much harder for these alternative assets. So for something like, you know, a cryptocurrency, it's that, you know, you might have a thesis around network effects, you know, around, you know, more adoption or, you know, a hedge against inflation. Now for a Picasso, it's much, you know, it's much less clear around how you think about that. But I think it's important still to be grounded in some sort of philosophy of how you're picking these assets.
Do you see, so obviously, the value of alternative assets goes up and down, and the demand for them goes up and down. But the market for them is only going to get more and more sophisticated, right? Over time, it's still going to develop more. I mean, as we now have an index for fine art, we're going to possibly have indices for other things.
Yeah, so I think that the hope would be that as these, you know, sort of niche markets develop, we'll get better understanding, and, you know, even eventually we might be able to model them and figure out how to include them in a, you know, in a pension fund. I mean, as of today, cryptocurrency is not included in the pension fund regulation, and I think that's for good reason, right? Is that we don't have a good theoretical way of thinking about, you know, the risk reward relationship and diversification.
Dr. Musa Malwandla, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. Chief Investment Officer at Differential Capital, Alternative Investments on your Non-Alternative Investment School.